First of all, the Sadducees were the priestly crowd in Palestine. They ran the temple. They literally were the directors of liturgy and performed all the liturgical services, blah, 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 blah. As opposed to the Pharisees, who were just a bunch of religious scholars and teachers. And the Sadducees did not buy into the notion of a resurrection from the dead. So it's important, I think, that we get a little historical context. The Jews had a unitary view of what makes a human being. I mean, I grew up being told that a person is made up of body and soul. Well, the Jews wouldn't recognize that at all. That's Aristotle. That's Plato. That's Socrates. None of whom were Jews. The Jews, on the other hand, simply believed that you were alive if you were breathing. So to be a person was to be breathing with a body. And they couldn't imagine a bodiless person. So when you expired, that is, when you breathed out and nothing else came in, you weren't a person anymore, you were a corpse. So the Jews in Hebrew don't even have a word for body, as the Greeks did, that's separable from the soul. You're either a person or you're a corpse, and if you're a corpse, you're a nobody. So that's what lies behind behind this text. So where did this business of the resurrection of the dead come from? Well, that's where this passage that Diane read is crucial. The Jews, for most of their history, when they came into Palestine around the year 1000, a little earlier, were an occupied people. The Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans. Because unfortunately, Palestine was midway between the Fertile Crescent and Egypt, which everybody wanted to go and conquer. So you had to go. You couldn't get there from here without going through Palestine. And you did. You stomped on all the people who were there. So there you go. Alexander the Great, of course, had also appropriated Palestine as part of his empire in the 3rd century. And after he died, it was divided among his generals. And they kept control of Palestine until about the year 150, when a Syrian general named Antiochus Epiphanes took over. And for reasons not entirely certain, he hated the Jews. He hated the Jews. He wanted to do everything anti-Jewish to extirpate Judaism from the face of the earth. And one of the things was to have them eat pork. So to burn the Torah, eat pork, to violate the Sabbath, blah, 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 blah. And so there was a Jewish family named the Maccabees who said, well, we're not going to sit still for this. And so there was a revolt. It was called Maccabean Wars. And we get some residue of that in this sort of Hollywood version of this lady with these seven kids being cut up by Antiochus' agents. So the Jews had a real problem. Here are these Jews dying for God. But the Jews also knew that God was above all steadfastly loving. That was their absolute notion of who God was. And so, in a great act of imagination, they said, well, if God is steadfastly loving, then God must be loving even after death. But then you have a problem. You got all these body parts all over the place. So the Jews said, well, if God is going to be faithful to us even after death, then God can only reconstitute us as body people. So belief in the resurrection is always a belief in the resurrection of the body. Okay? It's not the resurrection of the body, it's the reconstitution of the person who has to be bodily. Okay. The Sadducees, who were a fairly creepy group, so far as we can get, although they ran the temple, the Quisling, they collaborated with the Roman occupiers. They were the wealthy, and they ripped off all the poor people. refused to buy into this newfangled notion of the resurrection of the dead. So that's where we get this little conflict. And that's where we are. The resurrection of the dead results not from some kind of immaterial principle in us, or not for our yearning for there to be something after death, but it rests on a belief that God is faithful. God is steadfastly dwelling. So that's where we are with the notion of the resurrection of the dead. Jesus believed in the resurrection of the dead. Pretty clear. Most of the Jews did. The Sadducees were this elite, you know, and they did not represent popular religiosity at all. So, the resurrection of the dead on Remembrance Day. I thought I'd like to just say a little bit about Remembrance Day. I grew up in the States, of course, where, well, somebody had written a book with a great title, Patriotic Gore. In America, we believed, when I was growing up, that every war we ever engaged in was just, fair, warranted, blah, 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 and everybody who died in the war was a hero. And that's a normal tendency, I think. There's a great line, I think, in Henry V, where Henry says, I do not think they die well who die in war. And although we talk about the good war, World War I as a good war, and I guess World War II, is there such a thing as a good war? I mean, are people really ennobled? I don't doubt that some few are. But I really wonder if this day in which we believe that all those body parts are going to be united and people are going to be home, be brought to God, are they going to be brought to God because of the wars that we engage in as human beings or despite them? I think this is a real and important question. I remember I was in the States during the Vietnam War, and the only time people ever walked out on a sermon was when I questioned the legitimacy of that war. A good friend of mine, a young black man, lived across the street from the rectory, died in that war, and I wondered about the value of that death. It seems to me, and this is just obviously just a proposal, that Remembrance Day is a time to reflect on the human condition whereby or wherein we human beings seem to be able to progress only by destroying each other. I think it's a melancholy day. Yeah, it's better that Hitler and the Nazis and the fascist forces in the First World War did not run the world. And maybe there were no alternatives, just like that. Maybe there were no alternatives to destroying 80,000 Japanese when we Americans bombed Hiroshima and then Nagasaki. But it seems to me it should give us pause to wonder, where are we as a species? Where destruction of another human being is the only means to some greater good. I mean, it may well be, but I still put it to you that it's a melancholy kind of realization. Everybody's son is a mother's son. All those young men and women who died, or husbands, mothers, sisters, brothers, blah, blah, blah. And of course, the whole nature of war has changed massively in the past several hundred years. In the old days, just each side picked a hero and they went out and battled until one was dead, and everybody just sit around watching it from their carriages or from a hilltop. In the old days, civilian casualties were maybe 5-10% of the devastation of war. Today it's about 90%. Civilians, non-combatants. So I'm not trying to blacken anything, but I do think it's really important that we disenchant ourselves, because it's so easy to wave the flag without recognizing how blood-drenched the flags are, all the flags are. And to ask God for the fortitude and the courage not to go to war, maybe. They just canonized an Austrian farmer, Franz Jägerstätter, who refused to join the German army in World War II and so got his head cut off. I don't think I could be a Franz Jägerstätter. I think he was heading the right direction. The fundamental issue seems to me to be our tendency always to justify ourselves at any cost, at any cost. It is very difficult to come to that point, which is somebody has called the grace of self-doubt. And maybe because this is so intense part of my consciousness, maybe because we have a man in the White House in the States who may obliterate the planet if he bombs Iran. So it's a thoughtful time, I think. Should be a thoughtful time, a prayerful time.